Thank you. It's so nice to see you and to be here. I hope someday soon we'll be able to meet in person again in Prague. I look forward to that. That's hard to follow. I like how the professor ended with his main message. I think I'm going to start with my main message, which is, based on what we just heard from Magnus and from Kate, really, the like-minded democracies cannot participate in the upcoming Olympics in Beijing. Main message is, I think that the democracies need to figure out how best to sort of coordinate and be unified in that message that we want to have nothing to do with this, which is going to absolutely be a sort of a modern replay of the 1936 Nazi Olympics. But prior to that, I think it's important. I think the first thing I want to sort of address is that many of the calls at the moment with respect to the Winter Olympics focus on asking the IOC to move the Olympics, from China somewhere else, right? Just get them out of Beijing and out of China, and that would be a great solution. But that is extremely unlikely. So I'm going to start with just kind of going over, and I'll try to be, I know we're running a bit late on time, short on time, so I'm going to try to move through this fairly quickly. I'm going to touch on a few reasons why I think that that's essentially virtually impossible. The Winter Games will be held in China. And then next, I'll touch briefly on the relationship between the UN and the International Olympic Committee, IOC. And then thirdly, I'm going to also just sort of touch on a few points in addition to what Magnus and Kate just discussed in terms of other human rights-based reasons why we shouldn't be participating. The community of democracies should not be participating in the Beijing 2022 Olympics. What should we do? Okay, so first the so basically there are a couple of reasons why it's virtually impossible that the IOC will move the games out of China. And in part, I mean, there's certainly a financial reason, right? Sunk costs are a big part of it, and also just income that won't be made if the games are moved, reputational interests both of the IOC and of China. And then there are other reasons too. For example, there's no precedent for moving the games once the host city has been decided. There have been three cancellations of Olympic Games in the past, and these were due to World War I and World War II. And of course, now we have the first postponement of the Olympic Games because of COVID-19. So, no historical precedent. And also, probably most importantly, as we've been hearing about in the news and reports from the folks who met recently with the IOC officials, the IOC's position is one of political, quote, political neutrality. If you listen to sort of Thomas Bach's speeches, that's a constant refrain. We are politically neutral. It means that we, the IOC, will not make any assessment of China's human rights record, nor take any related action. There's no authority, and that goes counter to the Olympic Charter and the IOC's stance. So, what is interesting, though, of course, is that the IOC has shifted a bit with its reforms in the Olympic Agenda 2020, which was adopted in 2017, to introduce some human rights requirements, including that the host city must comply with the UN guiding principles on business and human rights. But these, of course, don't apply. I'm sure that by design to the 2022 Olympics in Beijing, they will first take effect in 2024 in Paris. So another reason why the IOC in China, well, the IOC won't dare to move the games is that there already has been great fanfare around the fact that Beijing will be the first ever city to host both the Summer Games and the Winter Games. So this is a first. you know, and of course we know China likes big firsts, and the IOC is all about this big first, too. If you, I listened recently to Thomas Bach's brief message to the citizens of Beijing, where he congratulates them on the unveiling of the emblem for the Winter Games. The emblem is titled Winter Dream. And so on December 15, 2017, Bach said that this unveiling of this emblem is another important step to make history for Beijing as the first city in the world to host both the summer and winter editions of the Olympic Games. The emblem stands for the vision of Beijing 2022, showcasing the best of China to the world, the unique blend of modern and ancient traditions, end quote. Concluding, he said, the IOC is truly honored to be working side by side with our Chinese friends to make history in this Olympic city once again. Another reason, the IOC has four vice presidents who are just under Thomas Bach in the IOC hierarchy. And one of them happens to be a PRC national by the name of Yu Zaiqing. He's been a member of the IOC since 2000. He served on the executive board of the IOC from 2004 to 2012. And he also had a previous stint as a vice president. But very curiously, I found he in July of this year, just so in July 2020, he had his VP term extended, even though he has reached the IOC age limit. So his term has been extended until 2025. Anyway, so just I'll leave that there. I thought that was quite interesting. As noted earlier, financial interests are a huge factor. One example, Alibaba is one of the Olympic partners. This is a program, it's the acronym is TOPS for the Olympic partners. So large multinational companies like Coke, Dow, GE, Toyota, Omega, among others. This is the highest level of Olympic sponsorship. This group of about 13 or 14 sponsors invest a total of around $100 million each to obtain this level of Olympic sponsorship. Bach has said they are critical for the staging of the Olympic Games and their global reach and understanding. They help us communicate the Olympic values to people around the world. So as a side note, I just wanted to mention in terms of about Alibaba, participants in Beijing's 2019 South-South Human Rights Forum were invited to on a quote-unquote public diplomacy visit to Alibaba's headquarters in Hangzhou. Professor Shrembin of Tsinghua said of this public diplomacy occasion that it was an opportunity for the foreign visitors to see for themselves how China has realized the right to development in recent years, so that, quote, they can change their traditional Euro-American conception of human rights, end quote. So I imagine we're going to see there will probably be similar side trips and public diplomacy sorts of opportunities for people during the Winter Olympics. Alibaba, you know, front and center. Okay, so next I'd like to talk a little bit, just briefly, about the relationship between the UN and the IOC and just sort of the Olympic ideal and Olympic values and human rights. In the mid-1990s, a biennial agenda item was created by the General Assembly titled, quote, Building a Peaceful and Better World Through Sport and the Olympic Ideal. And this agenda item would reaffirm the observance of the Olympic truce before each summer and winter games. So once every 2 years, there would be a General Assembly resolution on the Olympics. So that was in the mid-90s, as I mentioned. And then in April 2014, the IOC and the UN concluded a memorandum of understanding, and the General Assembly passed a resolution by consensus supporting the leadership position of the IOC and the autonomy of sport. At the time, earlier, Ban Ki-moon had famously said, quote, Olympic principles are UN principles, end quote. Bach wrote at the time, this resolution recognizes the contribution of sport to foster dialogue, peace, and development. It affirms the invaluable contribution of the Olympic movement in establishing sport as a unique means for the promotion of peace and development. And it also encourages member states to give sport due consideration in the context of the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN. When Antonio Guterres became UN Secretary General in January 2017, the partnership between the IOC and the UN became even closer. Guterres and Bach agreed to establish a, quote, direct partnership between the UN and IOC and the IOC. As a result, and relatedly, Guterres abruptly decided to close the UN Office on Sport for Development and Peace, which was a standalone office. The substantive portfolio then would move to, wait for it, the Department of Economic and Social Affairs, DESA, which we know is effectively controlled by China, by the Chinese government. So interestingly, the first media outlet to announce the news of the closure of the Office on Sport for Development and Peace was Xinhua. And Xinhua was the only news agency to report on the purported reason or assumed reason. It described the closure as a, quote, an apparent cost-saving measure, end quote. But no reason was given publicly by the IOC or the UN for this move, which happened within a few months of Guterres becoming a Secretary General. I found that quite curious. Anyway, moving to the Human Rights Council. So in addition to the biennial UN General Assembly resolution on building a peaceful and better world through sport and the Olympic ideal, there's also a thematic item in the Human Rights Council, which is entitled Promoting Human Rights Through Sport and the Olympic Ideal. There have been quite a few resolutions on the issue of sport and human rights, including my favorite, a Human Rights Council Advisory Committee report. So among other things, the most recent resolution on the topic in June 2020 calls on states, the IOC, the UN, and UN specialized agencies to, quote, maximize the potential of sport to make a meaningful and sustainable contribution to the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals of the 2030 Agenda. This is obviously, I mean, this is a good thing. Great, right? But what about human rights? I think what we're seeing here, I think, is another example of sort of human rights getting sort of buried under or sort of pushed to the side for sustainable development, right? Sort of getting buried under the development framework. So the Olympics are also supposed to be an enabler of all human rights, but again, that seems to be shifting towards development. I even saw some language somewhere, either in a resolution or a statement on the HRC website, that the Olympics are also now being invoked as something that can help with COVID-19 recovery. So anyway, all of this gets bundled together as a big win for China, at least in terms of optics and a distraction from Chinese government's human rights record and its very problematic COVID response. Okay, in December 2019, the General Assembly adopted the Olympic Resolution, Sport for Development and Peace, Building a Peaceful and Better World Through Sport and the Olympic Ideal, for the upcoming Tokyo Olympic Games. The PRC ambassador to the UN, Zhang Jun, used the opportunity to make a statement introducing the Winter 2022 Beijing Games. He didn't mention human rights once in his statement, and I'm just quoting a part of his statement. Quote, do we want multilateralism or unilateralism? Unity or division? Cooperation or confrontation? Progress or regress? On these major issues of principle, China's attitude is very clear. We firmly stand by multilateralism, side with the vast majority of the UN members, stand for fairness and justice, and side with the trend of the times. We share the same world and a common future. China will always be a builder of world peace, a contributor to global development, and a defender of the international order, and, of course, will work toward building a community of shared future for mankind. So he's bringing that, so right, the building of a shared future sort of into the Olympics, which is not a surprise for many of us. Katja, how much time do I have?
Three minutes, please. Okay, that's okay.
All right, I will speak quickly. I'll go to 11:15. Okay, all right, so assuming the games proceed in Beijing, what should the democracies do? So quickly, in addition to the egregious human rights violations currently underway that we know about already and we've heard about today, my co-panelist is a very sobering job explaining those. I think that countries, governments need to be focused on the human rights implications of just being present in Beijing for this event. Political hostage taking, totally, like, you've got a lot of people there, why not, right? So I'm thinking of the two Canadian Michaels, the Australians, Yang Hengjun and Cheng Lei, and other political prisoners, Gui Minhai, and let's not forget about Wang Bingzhang, too. Media. So the Australian reporters recently had to flee China, right? And all the, so many U.S. journalists getting kicked out of China. Who's going to cover the games? How are we going to get a sort of reporting about what's actually really happening aside from like the China, the Chinese government approved narrative, right? So that this is going to be PRC's discourse power at its finest, because it's unclear if how will independent journalists be able to operate. Also, the Olympic Village, players, there's privacy, safety concerns, facial recognition, they're good, the apps to get into the village, into the venues. Facial recognition, surveillance, big data collection. What if there's a health scare, right? All of these things, very troubling. I can imagine the opening and closing ceremonies, happy Uyghurs and Tibetans dancing together on ice, right? We should not in any way be complicit with this. So the Washington Post editorial board over the past few months has actually published two editorials in which it has questioned whether or not China should be hosting these games, right? And whether China has the moral standing to host the 2022 Winter Olympic Games. The Washington Post editorial board said, we think not, right? So again, assuming the IOC did not withdraw the games from Beijing, so what do we do? I think we should gather as many allies and partners as possible to take a principled stand for human rights and refuse to confer legitimacy on Beijing. And then we also look for, think about alternatives. So boycotting the games, but also arrange for alternative games in other venues, perhaps Korea, Japan, Canada, Salt Lake City. This was done when the US led a boycott of the Moscow games in 1980, right? So that's one thought. Let me just skip over a whole bunch of stuff. And I wanna make one final point. So Bloomberg had asked Wang Wenbin, one of the spokespeople for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, asked him about the media reports that indicate that some were pushing for the International Olympic Committee to reconsider Beijing's hosting of the 2022 Winter Games, as politicians around the world voiced increasing concerns over China's human rights records. What's China's response? He basically says, this is, it's not an objective statement. The fact is that the majority of countries and people in the world recognize the fact that China's human rights conditions are constantly improving and China's achieved notable progress. At a recent UN Human Rights Council session, most countries voiced approval and support for China's position on issues related to Xinjiang and Hong Kong, as also Magnus just mentioned. He also goes on to say, that these calls for boycotts go against the spirit of the Olympic Charter and disrupts and jeopardizes the progress of the global human rights cause. So I thought that language was very interesting and very concerning. It's like, this is our show now. We're leading the way in terms of defining, leading the global human rights agenda and defining it, redefining it. Really, finally, okay, 1 year before the opening ceremony of the Beijing Olympics, so 1 year before will be February 2021, which is coming up, invitations are sent out by the IOC to the National Olympic Committees. So I think February 2021 is like a sort of a good marker for a plan for some sort of coordinated action. How do governments respond to the invitation to attend the Winter Games in Beijing in 2022. Okay, that's it.